Sometimes it's more than that.
Ellen, I just got word from the ratings group that we are the number one rated show on this station.
Who said?
Well, I kind of made that up.
We are the number one. You mean we get more listeners than anyone else?
Yeah, that's all it could mean, right?
Well, they're driving around in their cars.
That's why it's good to be on the drive
going
time
to work,
slot. Yeah.
Coming home.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to WJXC in the morning. I listen to Democracy Now.
Yeah.
And then I listen to Lincoln Mayorga.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just, you know, when I'm in the car, like you said, I just flip the channels now and then, and it's amazing, you know.
Yeah. It is. And keep us going here, folks. You know, we're making a new kind of constant request that you become sustaining members, because it makes it a lot, or supporting members. It makes it a lot easier, and we'll take the pressure of all these pledge drives we have to do. So if you can, yeah, as low as I, you know, I went on the site, Ellen, because I'm going to, instead of giving each pledge drive, I'm going to do like you're doing, give monthly.
Well, you know, it's kind of painless.
It's totally painless.
It works on your, it works through your credit card.
Right.
You have a chance at any time to change the amount you're giving every month, I believe.
Right. And it's as low as $5 a month. I mean, who can't afford that these days?
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, friends and enemies. Once again, or maybe for the very first time, you're listening to me, your host, Norman Douglas. The name of the program is Good Night, Norman. Broadcasting to you live tonight from the home of my dear mother in Virginia Beach, Virginia, on radio station WGXC 90.7 FM on their radio dial in Columbia and Greene Counties, New York, and WGXC.org on the World Wide Web. Tonight, in honor of my mother, without whom none of this would be happening, I'm going to read from my own book, published by Far West Press this year, in April of 2023. That book is available online from farwestpress.org and even at a few fine bookstores around the world. I think if you check that website, farwestpress.com, you can find out what bookstores carry Far West Press books. I don't know if I'm actually supposed to say that. But anyways, I just did. I hope you're not a Burning Man. My book, Love and the Fear of Love, is a collection of short stories written over the years. I believe the earliest one in there was published at the now defunct literary magazine Open City. It was written back in the 80s, and I think it was published in the 90s. Issue number 16. That's not a commercial plug because they don't exist. But I am going to solicit your money for the radio station, because it is a non-profit community radio station. And the new ongoing drive, as opposed to biannual drives, or is it semi-annual, twice yearly drives, is to ask for your money on a regular basis, preferably by doing like a monthly pledge. Do $1 a month, $5 a month, $5,000 a month, whatever you can afford to keep this radio station going. None of the broadcasters are paid other than with the love of their audience and the warm and fuzzy feeling they get inside, knowing that a couple people are listening to what they would like to be listened to. All right, without further brouhaha, I'm going to read one of the stories from my book, Love and the Fear of Love. This story is called L'Epac. The instant the eyes open, they close. The ears have a chance to give a listen around. The hiss of the embers, the quiet through the windows, occasionally punctuated by the soughing of tires on wet asphalt beyond trees that surround the meadow by the water, where the peepers grow quieter and the graying of the morning at night's end. A listening that puts aside a thought of going to buy groceries and pushes down the phony need to consider calling mom, and sighs to forget about seeing a friend who isn't here when the bed is soft enough and warm enough and close enough to every inch of the skin to simply lay there, with the shoulder blades cushioned like wings captured by a neighborly wind that carries nothing too far or fast, toes wriggling at the bedclothes' undersides as prelude to stretching one limb before a next, just far enough to draw them back into a curl that leans onto one side for a breath, rushing effortlessly deeper than a sigh, and drifts the dream of life, almost awakened, off for a further bout of soporific bliss. And now the sun is high, and so is the moon, but there's no one who asks the planets for whereabouts when the air keeps hanging around without a detailed plan to stave off a hunger that will come if this doesn't feel so easy to chill later, when time starts ticking off impulses to try what a little patience nullifies, left to its own devices without interference from morphologies of angst and desire, returned to dismiss the boundless energy a want reflects. No one is telling stories of tales that can't be told by chaos bird songs, unsung melodious chorals to scores no less or greater than this overhearing freed of looking to make a giant step outside or in or over. And now the grass is a carpet and the clothes are ragged and loose, and the streaks that dart across the bright blue day that shuts the eyelids over, fulfilled with light, playing at dragonfly or hummingbird or buzzing bee and bluefly, tuned in to the cicadan harmonies, entwined through toad and grasshopper, gripping the bow-springing fronds, rippled ripshod over gold fields of haw. All this because... Text breaks off here. I suppose I shouldn't have said that this book, I mean, it says on the cover of the book stories, but it should probably say poems and stories, which would make it a little easier on the reader, trying to decipher, like, in some tales, like that last one. But then again, the book is all about not deciphering, so... if I should give anything away. This is called Booze Can. It was only cloudy an hour after it was not. She loved her motorcycle, the sound of it, the size of it versus cars and trucks that shared the road, how the road kept coming up to meet it as long as she kept it going. But lately, it didn't help her forget her balls. She lost them and couldn't remember where. She suspected it was all her fault and made it her story. She didn't want to call the cops. She didn't trust cops. Cops depend on snitches, and snitches lie. It was a road that didn't end okay, if at all. To this end, she went to bars. She stopped in at Mars and knocked back a whiskey. She rode to Siberia and chugged a beer. At Lakeside, she downed some mezcal. Inside Lupo's, She sipped red wine. Bellied up in the Kraken, she finished a gin. The weather was perfect, and she stepped out for a cigarette. When she perched a butt between her lips, a dark-haired woman already smoking there reached out to offer a light. Drinking, she said as the tobacco sizzled and glowed and released a swirl of white fumes around their faces. And writing, the writer smiled. The lighter grinned. My buddies run a cheap speak and flop at their crib. Come over. When? Right now. Where? Follow me. You didn't say, Simon says. I only play serious games. It was a big Adams family house with six scary monsters on the porch arguing about the reasons they hated the POTUS, forgetting their hates were in agreement, as was their resolve to argue hatreds. Who's this? Snarled a dwarf with a flat snout and caved-in mug of a pugilist. She's drinking, said the dark-haired woman. The chthonic fighter sniffed hard and deep, as if the smack in his nose was running out. What's she drinking? Barked the tattoo started with its tail on the tip of her nose as the rest of it curled into a sideways eight all across her wide brow. The rider said, vodka this time. It's on me, said the woman she followed. Inside, she kissed the barmaid, who handed her a bottle of Stoli. She then poured down her face and neck and breast and belly and hips and thighs. It's on me. The bike rider set about licking and sucking. Maybe this is how to get my balls back, she thought, in a haze of quiet excitation. The other night I was doing a reading at the Hands on Main Gallery, Quarter Skill Design Build Studios office over on Main Street in Catskill. And I guess I ended up doing a kind of annotated reading. I only read a couple of stories, but I explained them more like paragraph for paragraph what exactly I was driving at. And on September 29th, for free, at the Lawrence Park drinking establishment on the corner of 3rd Street and Warren in Hudson, New York, at around 6 p.m., I believe, don't quote me, I'll be reading again, possibly from my book, but if... all goes well, a brand new tale. We'll see. Maybe both. And there'll be other readers as well. Once again, organized by my buddy at Far West Press. This tale is called Anna Capsarote. It was a small wooden structure past the end of a quiet town single road. that sloped to a ford. There was no sign on the door, but a single branch of haw hung by a rusty nail spoke to him, and he knocked. The rain cascaded from the black sky, and the swollen river lapped at the cabin's stone feet. A woman of monstrous beauty gently opened the door inward and smiled at him with an icy warmth that mirrored the glassy pools of darkness, beamed through the spectrum of color that shone in the maelstrom of her eyes. "You poor old fool, you're soaked. Come on." She gestured and turned and bent her back to open the wood stove, heaved a log from the small pile into the fire. She sat at the worn table on a low three-legged stool. "Sit." He felt his body warm and saw his clothes drying on the line. He was naked. "Proud." "We're fish, and love is the ocean. But you don't know or believe that. You're a sailor with no shipmates. You can't remember why they're gone because you left them. And all for some more mermaid. You poor old fool." He sat transfixed, unsure that he saw her head rise from barely above the tabletop until her whole figure, still seated, seemed bigger than him, so that the room, he felt, dwarfed him also closing on her. She was a child, then a hag, a young mother, then him. And the mermaid. Her fingers fiddled with the heap of dried leaves and twigs that covered the worn butcher block surface with the fragrance of fecund earth and its microbial mycologies, recomposing invisible phosphors and alchemistries of wood and green and sweetness. "I can't stop you drowning because you're not drowning. I can't return love to you because you can't lose love. A fool's thoughts believe energies transmute into a dramatic weakness, mistaken as a desire for a beauty already achieved as imagined. You can't dream of what is not. You fear love. I am dumb to you, mute. These 33 medicines are mixed to cut the power of the herb you think you want. If you drink the tea in the pot on the stove, no one knows when or what blowback I'll suffer. But first, I will ferry you. As if for the island, your mermaid will come, and you will dive in without hesitation." I mean, that feels obvious to me, but it may not be. So just pretend it's a poem instead of a story. This story is called Foolometer. Dead at last, I packed the hoopty, headed south. Uniforms waited at the river, weapons ready. A short one strolled by the passenger side, peered in. A big, dark, burly no-neck and wide eyes stood on my side, looked at me like I knew what to do. It knocked on the door. I opened it up. I got out and stood before it. "What the hell are you doing?" it asked.
"I don't know. You knocked on my door, so I got out. You want me to get back in?"
"Freeze!" hollered the other one, running my way, all crazy legs, heavy and loud. I didn't move. The salamander skittered just out of sight to the water. A crane soared high, followed fluxes. Chipmunks yelled at us from a giant woodpile. I heard fish jump after dragonflies, hunting skeeters. "Get back on the ride," hooted No Neck.
"What the fuck? That guy says freeze. You can't get in. If neither of you want to be in charge, I'll take over."
"Get to my D,"
Shorty shouted at the big.
have animals. Hey, what's going on? It's hot as hell. We're late.
The chimp riding shotgun piped in. Turn the car on, I said, if you really want to buck up the ozone some more. That monkey talked, said No Neck. What are you, a scientist? Wondered the black cat, seated on the seat back.
I told you they got animals.
Sarge, called No Neck. We need metrics.
Nobody move,
ordered Shorty, weapon pointed square at me. Sarge appeared, twirling his mustache next to a woman in a tight pink dress and heels, carrying a black plastic box with wires. Come here, you, Sarge snarled. Yes, sir, Sarge, I obeyed. No Neck and Shorty marched on either side. A committee of vultures steadily grew in number atop the official architecture. If you hurt Daddy, we'll bite and scratch his old silly, howled the red coat lab in the back of my ride.
Yeah, what the fuck was that? Sarge squealed. He has animals,
Shorty ratted on me to its boss. They talk, added No Neck.
Yeah, plug him in, Sarge ordered the woman.
Only if I get to plug back when your foolish metrics fail, I warned. She plugged. I felt a pinch. The whole caboodle sizzled, sparkled, backfired, loud AF, then blew the uniforms sky high. The sweet pink lady, aka the silent boatman, bit into my flesh and invited the menagerie and me to sing and dance on their yacht. I mean, again, I could use some meditation, I suppose, but this one is called Grasshopper Inc. They didn't see the eagle lift itself up from its nest, nor its nest, but they both pointed as one when it soared low between the sun-drenched trees that stood watch beside the wide and shallow creek, echoing with secrets of drift and swerve, both water and wood mirror in each other. Not unlike the imperceptibly moving stillness of stone and sky conformed to Earth's enduring fundament, as the heavens' unfathomable firmament. Was that a coincidence? The old woman asked the younger. Or do you have the sight? Our dead rarely whispered. The young one laughed. I can't honestly say I can see what can be seen now by me, never mind the two of us. But you're content. You can't see what you're not, and you're not a liar. And then, listening. I was scared when I was young. I'm scared now. Scared of what? Listen, there's nothing. Death is far from you, though. My time is near its end. So it is. The young woman let her hand rise from the coarse rock that held their perineum until her fingers found the old woman's back. And when time comes to its end, death and life are cleared away with memory, and you'll be nothing, eternal, without knowing how. Kinda like now. The old woman sighed. I never had a plan. I traveled among travelers and roomed with those who stayed close to home. I enjoyed great beauties and suffered deep pains and wondered why there was so much. None of it enough to call it mine. Without releasing her pressed hand from the electric push of the old woman's slumped shoulders, the young woman nodded at a smooth black river rock that lay heaping itself toward the leap and swerve of the watery onslaught the sunlight played upon, so that the clamor
of spills splashed and joined to engage the seemingly inexhaustible energies of a dance she called an eddy among a flow that feels endless. I can't share the dream that separates us. There's no difference without sameness, and we're not the same. Let the unreality of unseen space between us collapse so that we are not here to go nowhere, because everywhere. Can this peace dreamed be without a purpose that sorority caused for an effect? Identity in dreams is meaningless. In dreams, dreamer and dream are one. This is one of the more poetic ones, I suppose, more like a poem. That's enough annotation. This is called Monophobia. Who could blame us? No one, of course. Only one fear leads to an impasse at the tail end of an enclosure she allows to confine her with the all she needs to compartmentalize fragments of feelings that needle and poke with persuasive persistence. For she imagines the soup of confusion harasses her with thoughts of escape into the constancy of wild and cyclical nature's ungovernable reliability. He is no different. His jumbles of meanings pretend to order a chaos that delivers silence as the menace underpinning each chimerically consecrated conversation his deftly invisible friends attempt to denigrate as counterbalance for the grandiosity of his humble exterior and the surroundings they favor. And around them, the headlines and broadcasts of words they quietly ignore embolden whole populations to bully an unholy populace into hiding, astounded by the defiance of those who go home later, earlier, and around the same time, no matter what they sound like between the thin masks of a mass comportment. Who dares to face down the fear of love? The death that demands of a body promises nothing but surrender to the patience of a permission that needs no thing more necessary than it already is and must be. She breathes with air that gives what it takes, like the trees and oceans embedded in an earth that swallows everything it lets go through the blackness of a planet encrusted as if twinkling light into an empty and timeless absence of property, walls, portals. A kiss, not for his lips, not for hers. Remembered, where memory lapses in its wild gesturing for controls ineffectually devised for what this is and never becomes. Terrorized by never wanting to dance alone, this choreographs not what I write or what's right, its rites performed without script or stint that replay an unspeakable piece uncollected into report, repeated so perfect as psyche wedded to love, like no secret bedroom witness soars through this wide unified open sky, unbroken like flickering bonfires, spitting sparks, fat manatees spout as sirens gone naked, while a whale bellies up the eye of a pinewood boy drifting the sea. Or who is never truly afraid of seeing the fear of why love won't leave us alone. This is called clout, which is really just an onomatopoeia word, you know, a word that sounds like the sound that it's about, clout. They rushed into it. He found her honey-colored face and wide mouth magnetic. Her dulcet voice sang through the dark behind a glistening moistness grown around tight little bubbles of spit that leapt between the plush mounds of her purple lips and the oily mother-of-pearl shards that made her sharp teeth electrify his hunger for the taste of deep kisses and cunt she promised once they exchanged vows. In the neon chapel, the priest looked up quizzically at her hijab to pronounce, "Your people are my people," then continued a bit faster until she grinned the final "I do." They chose a dingy motel. Its stifling air surpassed the sadness of the marriage shop that should have been an altar where bodies symbolically begin to emerge as one whole and amorphous love. As such, the splotched and threadbare sheet over the hard, paper-thin mattress where they lay naked at last might have been ground zero for lives of mutually assisted restructuring. But this never was, because he couldn't get it up. And this last year of their teenage, she already knew her patience only fueled his discomfort further. This had never happened to him, and he thought her assurances that whole lifetimes lay ahead belittled the importance of his failure. How could he live any lifetime without the regular thrust of muscle smashing the lead of his trusty wood? The next day, he met a small street poet who had met Goddess Pele while hiking the black girth of smoldering Kilauea alone. She led him up three flights to her studio, overlooking the harbor. He felt calm as he pushed her door shut, for his wand had already stiffened. His comfort only increased as the night wore on, each wearing the other as they writhed and churned, playing plunge and plash with bodies none pledged to unite unless the rumbles of thunder drowning out the patter of raindrops hammering window and rooftop expressed the sardonic rite of impish trickster consorting with a wily fluid priestess. As dawn broke through the single window in that attic, two groggy adulterers reckoned the stiffy was almost more ready to replay than her soggy bottom, but not. It struck him. One of these three persons must be a witch, but which one? There's also magic in this book, so this is called Madstone. Billy come home making a commotion like tarnation itself. We in the kitchen. Let me start this one over. And let me repeat that you are listening to me, your host, Norman, and the name of the show is Goodnight Norman. The name of the radio station is WGXC 90.7 FM in the Hudson Valley, Columbia and Greene counties, coming to you live from Virginia Beach, Virginia, at the home of my dear mama. And I'm reading from my own recently published book of stories, Love and the Fear of Love. This story is called Madstone. Billy come home making a commotion like tarnation itself. We in the kitchen, at the stove, Susanna stopped stirring chitlins. Me and Posey at the table, chopping it, laughing. We hush. We all three of us find Billy sprawl out on his back on the porch. He head blocked the screen. foam out his mouth. He gurgling, kind of grinning in a way it ain't laughing, crazy. Susanna take one look and say, we gonna tie him to my bed. I'm gonna get my rifle, find a white buck. You'll feed him chitlin' broth from the bastard. Hot? Posey asked. Lord, child, no, let it cool. Once we lift Billy on Susanna's bed, she sighed and mused. I've been wondering why I'm buying chitlins for Easter. I can't remember when I done it last. Now I know. I was wondering too, I say. I'm finna go now, Susanna say. Got my conch. Y'all listen up best you can. I'ma blow it when I need Posey help gutting the gall. Meantime, y'all start some lye with the stove ash and creek water. She look at me half stern for emphasis and tell me, you don't have to stay with Billy. Don't get scared. Yes, ma'am, I nod, already trembling with the fears. Billy twitched like a cartoon monkey. He snarled and wailed like a rotten cat. He sweat pores, open wide, stank. Mucus and foam drain out his mouth and nose and puddles. I shovel out some ash and sift it, boil water on the stovetop in the steel pot, mix the white ash in and scoop chitlin broth in the rice pot and let it cool while I dab and wipe his head with a cup of washcloths. I keep rinsing and wringing at the sink. Mostly I'm scared to touch his skin with mine. And every time I feels the clammy boiling rubbery suck, that's his brown skin turning yellow against mine, I hear Susanna say again, don't be scared. Posey go when we hear Susanna blow. Day back home come sunrise. Billy hollering the whole time. Says a woman biting him. Wild, black like Lucy Mare. Strong haunches, hard feet, great titties. Ripe cunning, he'd like to fall deep in. Ain't come out. Terror, he can't scream enough away. Lie about right, Susanna say. Now this. And she scraped lye, rusty yellow like apple cider out the pot, rolling the gall till it go hard. Hold the boy mouth open, Susanna say. Don't let him bite you. Nightfall, he write like rain. This story seemed to cause some concern. I suppose it may sound more straightforward than a lot of them. If it is autobiographical, people always want to know if stories and books and fictions are autobiographical. I mean, you can't ask that a lot about this book, but anyways, this is one where people decided they would ask. It's all autobiographical. Outgo, every story in here. This story is called Outgo. Why should I put myself out there? People are mean and scared, and I'm scared of them. I should know to keep my feelings to myself. No one ever offers me anything real, and all the love I gave away is gone. It's not like I can get it back. Nothing will replace it. My life is my business. What I do will stay secret. No one will know the reason. I don't care if anyone thinks I'm sensible or not. They don't believe a word I say. Not one iota. Every breath gets me nothing but senseless outcomes. All my efforts show me that my decisions are meaningless. What I do is for me. The reasons are best kept to myself. Nothing can make me believe otherwise. I won't give another person power to disrupt my peace. I won't be at their mercy. It sickens me to hear all this phony talk of love. All they really want is to fight me, to hurt me, more than I can even guess. Then tell me it's my fault. my choice. And they're right. I won't be caught giving anybody anything just so I can lose, just to help them achieve the selfish ends that amount to nothing but my downfall and humiliation. I'm special. I know this about myself, and I'll defend what others don't recognize. I'm creative, and what I do is better than all the lousy crap people appreciate. Why defend the obvious? I hate how they think they know me. How could anyone be so stupid? No one knows me. I'm not the same as anyone. I need to find a way out of here. There must be someone better, someone good, somebody above the swamp I see, somebody who's really real. If only I knew them. They must be out there. Someone special who naturally sees how other people are beneath us. I thought that's how it was with Tracy, and then Pedro, and later Justine, or Octavia. But they all turned out to be weak, different from what I thought. From friend to frenemy to enemy. I can't believe I called them friend. Where are they now? I don't even know if they're in the world anymore, if they ever were. No more illusions. No more dumb decisions. I'm just going to take care of my body. It's the only thing that's worth it. I made mistakes, but I tried. I had good intentions. I gave and gave and gave. And what did I give back? Get back? Nothing. Actually, that's deeply philosophical, but you'd have to understand the philosophy. Damn, I thought there was another story. Okay, let's see. There are other stories. But I thought there was another one that... This one is called Half Rabbit, Half Dog. We saw each other every day and every night for years. I had a slew of names I called Lana, Lonnie Pants, and Land Rover, and Lana Bonana, and Lonnie Punani, and Lanky Master, and a thousand other things I came up with for no reason other than to keep smiling and laughing like fun was a crime, and we were rebels without a care. Of course, we were so careless, things turned reckless long before we both knew we had to be careful. I never said so, and neither did she, but you know there was other motherfuckers talking and making big shite. Fuck 'em, she said, and I said so too. At a bonfire night outside town, Damien got loud about Lana. She stood up from the big log a bunch of other people were also sitting on, passing whiskey and weed. She said, fuck this shit, and started for the house. Damien pointed at her and howled. When he stopped, an owl hooted from the trees, standing round the edge of the big pond. Bobby said, fucking owl. The coyotes got to yelping on cue much farther away. Fucking coyotes, roared Damien. Lana stopped in mid-track and turned and yelled, fucking bitch, fuck you, you fuck. Peepers and crickets and snap crackling wood was the only next sound. Then Marissa said, damn. I found Lana in the kitchen in the house. A fire was glowing in the living room fireplace where Jasmine and Jake were making out and finger fucking like teenagers do. I walked past and sat across from the bestie. Motherfucker, she said, what the fuck? I rubbed my eyes with the heels of my palms for as long as it took to feel like my head felt different inside than when I started. When I stopped, finally, Lana was looking at me quizzically and said, what the fuck was that about? On top of a swivel and crane of her neck for emphasis, and added without missing a beat, is there any whiskey? I shrugged at the same time as Jake must have come up for air in the living room to say, you freeloaders better leave her parents' liquor alone. They'll be pissed. Lana's jaw dropped, and her eyes went saucer-sized, and probably her muscles got tight and then loose like a slingshot rubber band action, because she sprang out her seat after it seemed she crouched over Jake. jasmine knocked out, stretched cold on the oriental or Persian rug between the unkempt ottoman and the dilapidated davenport, looking like bleached blonde vampirella from the back, the way her feet planted on his thighs. She curled her neck round the corner of his head and snarled and lunged and shook until she tore away and whipped her skull and tresses back to display a bloody chin under her toothy grin, snapped fast on a gob of flesh like a freed harpy jackalope. Jake keened like a banshee, with one hand clapped over the bloody gushing, and Landshark bounded out under the bright harvest half moon to wait at the car, where she spat the top chunk of his ear in her palm like it was pirate's booty. Red and white blotch for me to see. You can imagine it didn't end well with Jake's call to the cops and a knock on the door opening next morning to four uniformed and armed people between me and Jake's bandaged head. But Lana was never jailed, and there is no end to our friendship of love. For all these years later, tonight, we are going out drinking again. I mean, I suppose I have about 13 more minutes to read from my amazing book of stories published by my amazing publisher, Far West Press, available locally in the Hudson Valley at the Spotty Dog Bookstore, and I think even at the, whatever that place is called, Jackson something on Spring Street in the city. Love and the Fear of Love from Far West Press. And check out the other fine books published by Far West Press, even though I don't know if I'm supposed to make ads like that, but you can. Okay, this will probably be the last story that I read as time is running out. There are more stories still. You haven't even heard the half of them. In my book, and I'm reading this because, like I said, in case you missed it earlier, or in case you just woke up from dozing off, since you're really supposed to be snoozed out by now, I'm reading this because next week, another historic occasion, another great Monday holiday, September 11th, my birthday. That's right. The assassination of Chilean, democratically elected Chilean President Salvador Allende by the CIA stooge Augusto Pinochet on September 11th, 1973, my 14th birthday, means nothing compared to the fact that it's my birthday. And then that other September 11th that you probably think about when you hear the date, because you don't really know anything about American history, like it's CIA takeovers of foreign countries, is nothing but twin the biggest birthday candles ever. So, to me, anyways. This is, you can turn off now, or go to sleep, like I said. Go back to sleep. This is the last story probably I'm going to read from my book, because time is running out, even though time is an illusion. It's called Earth Coincidence Control Office. From the book Love and the Fear of Love by me, your host, Norman Douglas, for another iteration of Goodnight Norman, right here on WGXC Hudson Cairo, Accra, New York. WGXC.org on the World Wide Web. Become a subscriber, a supporter today, monthly supporter. Do it. Give a couple of shekels a month. Actually, I don't even know what the conversion rate of shekels to dollars is. So give a couple dollars a month. Become a sustaining member. Earth Coincidence Control Office. You remind me of the woman I love, or she reminds me of you. But you're not the ego I remind me of, and that's okay. The woman I love, she comes and she goes, and she gives me words and things, and leaves things behind that she finds and calls hers, even though we both know that no thing is hers, because even if there were things, and me, and her, then they would be ours, but they're not, because that's not how this is. Even though I play along for the beauty of cast-offs found and made as if renewed in the revolving of headspin and magical touch we plant in the darkness left by what shines us against the muscle and squish that trips the fantastic electric extended magnetic as infinite stretches from nowhere, who knows? Not that the woman I love takes anything from me, because I have nothing to give, having been here too long without being shipwrecked or cast up from the deep, and knowing nothing worth having or winning or losing, or why and not will keep something to keep me from keep looking to see if it's not. Sometimes, when still, I will offer the woman I love unsolicited sounds from my mouth, and squiggly lines up my fingers as if they are suitable for a woman I love who doesn't ask for them until she asks, whereon I spill them like beans behind everywhere clumsy as if nothing will grow healthy leaves I can climb on after she ascends out of my reach before I lose sight while I am holding my breath thinking the woman I love leaves me breathless. And so, I practice holding my breath for the woman I love the way I practice for me, knowing the woman I love is a mermaid, and no man who can't hold his breath deep and long is worth the end that follows his finding the folly of loving a mermaid who hangs portals to life on land at the fake door of the room I remade the aquarium of a drowning escaped by hanging my effigy there until I snatched the belt, tightened around my neck, and cinched it to my waist, as if I might really choke myself out, for better or worse. I hold my breath for the woman I love, because you remind me she is the mermaid I love, who moves like the waves that are constant ripples that repeat without stint the waxing and waning and coming and going that flows us into the oceans that spawned air for spores spewed willy-nilly to root like willow and hemlock and hawthorn the hoot owls have hidden amidst for 100 million years that mean nothing to them more than the slow bunny foo-foo that's ready for lunch at the drop of a swoop from the heavens at night. I hold my breath knowing I cannot stop the woman I love leaping for air as if a mermaid can breathe it by seizing control from the winds that bring breath like ships sailed closer to the cave where she flattens the tires that would let her lost sailors return to the land their old mother saw fit to plant them on. I hold my breath because I want to stop the woman I love and hold her while knowing I cannot stop and hold the woman I love, because I hold my breath wanting to stop the woman I love and hold her. I hold my breath because there's no failure for anything that I or the woman I love might mistakenly fail to do or not in our mutually brazen, mistaken, failed effort to tame the tangled trace of mermaidenhood she would prefer to arise from her breast like mother and babe, unconditionally Jesused as salvation from and of a land she never truly dared inhabit, because she could not, if she tried, with or without me, before, during, or after. I hold my breath, therefore, because I do not need to hold my breath, not on land, nor under the earth, nor even within the waters she forgets are not hers alone, just like I, too, forget everything, as if I could remember being reminded of the woman I love. I can breathe underwater, because it is I who have made the woman I love, the mermaid I love. For the woman I love never was the mermaid I love, nor even the woman I love, as you know well if you've listened to me. You who are not the woman I love, you remind me of, just as the woman I love could never be nor remind me of the woman I love, when it is I who made her the woman I love, when I made myself love the woman I love, who I never loved, because I can only love the woman of love, as I love who you remind me of loving, as if the woman I love because she is no more and never was, nor will be, the woman I love. You see, the woman I love is nothing like me. All right, I guess that's enough reading of my own writing on my own radio show on the eve of my own birthday, even though there's 3 minutes left and I'm not really sure how I can fill it up with anything that's worth you listening to. Maybe you'll just fall asleep. Or maybe I'll see if I can find one more story. This is not my favorite, but it's called Caveman. You've been listening to me, your host, Norman Douglas, on Goodnight Norman, here on WGXE. This story will probably go, but I'll be back in 2 weeks. That will be the 14th, 15th of September. Will it? Am I adding correctly? No, that's incorrect. More like the 17th, 18th. Caveman. Moonwater collects on grasses and darkness to steady retreat into soil. Bodies huddle close near a river ring. Skyfire rises. Invisible flame spreads inside the air. Deep dream touch stirs this body unwinding between Maisie and Sosa. Sosa moans softly, fucking Banto. Maisie arouses us with a gift, a rub. Awaking excitedly joined. Slowly, smashing of flesh releases cool night from muscle and organ. Stretching bodies push wild polyrhythms pulsed ever closer to common sameness. Throbbing delights burst forth as loin spasms sharing bright laughter. Then, most of us piss. Some shit. The babes suckle, nursing. Small bodies run. Screeching round the waning fuck circle of dream touch. Woodpeckers point at food in trees. Our limbs climb us up to find holes they made. Larvae are fat sweets munched as we drop many for brothers and sisters, scooping savory fare